Hello and welcome back to the Off The Record DJ podcast. And in today's episode, we're taking you back to three very, very important conversations that we had with three very influential people within the DJ industry. We are going to be taking you back to conversations we had with the founder of Mixcloud, the founder of InFlight, and the CEO of 1001 Tracklist. Now, each conversation is super interesting, and these three platforms play a major role in the DJ industry. Everybody knows Mixcloud. You can upload your mixes up there, take down free, and is growing a bigger audience year on year. InFlight is a promo delivery service for DJs, allowing you to get exclusives directly to your email inbox. And then we have 1001 Tracklist, now seen as one of the biggest players in the music industry, where you can search for any track list that you want across a wide selection of electronic music. Enjoy this week's Off The Record podcast.
Okay, here we are. We're live and direct with Nico from Mixcloud. We're really excited to have you here as the founder and CEO of Mixcloud. And I've also got Lawrence James, yes, one of the team members, in on the call as well.
Thanks for joining us, Nico.
Some good questions. So first of all, Nico, can you give us a brief history about yourself and how Mixcloud started and what Mixcloud is for anyone that's listening out there that maybe has been living under a rock?
So. Yeah, well, thank you guys, first of all, very much for having me on the show. No, really appreciate it. So brief history of Mixcloud in a nutshell. About 10 or 12 years ago, I was at college in the UK, had a radio show with a buddy of mine, and we were looking for somewhere to host our DJ mixes and radio shows online, legally, easily, and somewhere where we could share them with friends as well. And at the time, you basically had the options between like the iTunes podcast directory and uploadmegafileshare.com, and it's like really crappy
file shares.
And so we kind of maybe somewhat naively thought that, you know, this would be an easy thing to do and build a website for that. Little do we know how complicated copyright law is.
And of course,
it took us many, many years and lots of hard work and expensive lawyers and things like that. But, you know, the history and the origin of the company really was to create a safe space for DJs, artists, and audio creators to host their creative work online. And I think that, you know, especially when it comes to DJing, when you're playing music that may be other people's music, it's really, really important for us, and we believe it's important for everybody, that those artists actually, who you're playing, get paid as well. They get paid royalties. So that was kind of the initial vision of the company, the initial kind of like, you know, what we were trying to achieve at the start. And it's kind of grown since then, and we can definitely get into how it's grown. But at its core, the initial idea was just like, how do we create this like safe space for DJs to express themselves online?
How good of a DJ were you? Or do you still DJ?
Still DJ. Oh,
cool.
Still do radio shows every once in a while. I had a regular for a bit when I was living in New York recently. But I would say I used to like be very much the sort of DJ who is sort of very technically minded. Used to follow like the DMC championships, coming from the sort of hip hop background and like scratching techniques and things like that. And then sort of over the years, I've realized I've sort of like broadened my taste, kind of listened to a lot more different styles of music, and now just focus more on like things that I enjoy playing and that the crowd will enjoy. So I would say I'm sort of DJ who like enjoys the kind of good vibes.
Yeah.
The kind of like, you know, I don't like to get too serious or heavy music. I don't know.
That's all good. That's all good.
I'm pretty decent, but I'm not like, you know.
Do you have a DJ setup at home? Just obviously everyone always asks, what's your DJ setup? What do you use? So do you have one at home and what is it?
Yeah. So I've got some Pioneer XDJs at home, XDJ 1000s, which is kind of like basically just for home use. In the office, we got the CDJ 2000s, the Nexus, and that is, you know, what I, cool. But basically the home is like, I want to put something together, just play around and have fun. If we want to do like a serious proper mix and show, then I go into the office.
Just, so bring it back to Mixcloud and a bit more in the modern day. So when I was on, started on Mixcloud going back maybe 7 years ago, it was essentially just a place where you would kind of just upload your mix and then you'd share a link and people just go and listen to it. Whereas now it's kind of evolved into a bit more of a social hub where there's different platforms you can be on, like Select or Premium, and you can connect with your favorite DJs on there. Do you just want to talk us through, you know, how it's evolved and why you think it needs to evolve that way? And has it been successful for you in that front?
Yeah, totally. So, like I mentioned, when we first started out, it was a very simple idea of like just a safe space to upload a mix or radio show and not worry about it being taken down, because Mixcloud takes care of clearing the copyrights and getting the licenses in place.
Yeah.
Since then, especially kind of over the last 2 or 3 years, I'd say, we've been focused really on two things. One is increasing the ways that DJs and audio creators can express themselves creatively. So by that, I mean, we've added the ability to put up posts that are like text or images, and most recently the ability to go live, which we can get into if you guys want to. And then the other direction that we've been kind of focusing on as well is the ability for DJs to start to earn a little bit of income from their craft.
Of course.
So we launched something called Select, which is our monetization program, where you can set up a subscription for your channel, and you can choose if you want to make things exclusive only for your paying fans. So that was the first thing we did. We recently launched a few ticketed live streams. So that's the second thing we're doing.
Right.
We're looking at things like tips and donations and things like that. So, you know, I'd say broadly speaking, in a nutshell, it's like, how do we allow and enable more forms of creativity? Uh-huh. And how do we help people to start to generate a little bit of income online from what they're doing?
Nice. So just a user who is not a DJ who wants to go and listen to music, Mixcloud is a place for them as well, because ultimately they can go and they can either pay a subscription to one of their favorite DJs or artists to listen to them on a regular basis and get exclusive shows. Am I correct in that?
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly.
Or they could pay to listen to their favorite local DJs unlimited. Unlimited way. Now, why do you think that's important, or how is that different to somebody just signing up to Spotify or Apple Music? Why is Mixcloud in such a unique position there?
Yeah. So as a listener, you guys are right. There's basically three options. You can sign up, have a free account, listen to everything for free. You'll see some ads, you may hear some ads. You won't be able to access things that are exclusive there. Or you have an option, if you have a favorite DJ, you're like a super fan of John Digweed or Jazzy Jeff or whoever it is, you can subscribe to just that channel and then you get the exclusives. You get, you know, basically kind of a feeling of supporting the DJ, the creator, getting closer to them. Or if you're kind of more of a generalist and you like listening to a little bit of everything and you want to kind of get rid of the ads, you can subscribe to Premium, which is our sort of site-wide subscription. But to answer your question about kind of why it's different to Spotify, I guess in a way we've always felt that, you know, we put a lot of trust in human curation and this idea that like DJs spend a lot of time listening to music, going through it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Filtering it, finding what's good, thinking about the flow, thinking about mix, thinking about the journey, thinking about how everything kind of fits together. And so, you know, for us, it's just a better listening experience than putting on a random algorithmically generated playlist where like, there might be some good songs in there, but maybe they don't fit that well together and it's a bit kind of weird to listen through. So
I had mentioned it. When I first started as a resident DJ, I found that you would get the punters, people coming out to clubs, nightclubs, to listen to the way that you would mix or listen to the set that you put together. And maybe discover new sounds, new music. And that's something that still happens to this day. And obviously pre-COVID, when all the clubs are open, if you're somebody who goes out to discover music and listen to your favorite DJs, it's natural to use something like Mixcloud to listen at home to those DJs and rediscover the things that they may be playing out live. But if you just want to sit in your car and listen to the radio, then obviously Spotify, Apple Music takes care of that style of listening, I suppose. And I feel like that's where the differentiation comes in really well. I think Mixcloud have reigned supreme throughout the last 10 years of providing that experience for those who want to dig deeper with the artists that they follow. And
I would say we're not super mainstream, you know, like if you're looking for a place to just listen to like top 100 pop songs, maybe not the best place.
No.
But if you're kind of like hoping to go a bit deeper in the music and really get into it and have a genre or a style or a scene that you want to get into, that's where we kind of excel.
So for some of our kind of beginner DJs, you know, wanting to sign up and start growing like a fan base, do you have any like tips for like the big guys who are on Mixcloud, like you say, your John Digweeds or your Jack Skillses or people like that who are generating plays and plays? What are some of the things they do and how they promote their music, but also what they do kind of inside the show? I remember when I used to upload, I always used to think about that first kind of 30 seconds or 1 minute to really hook a listener in and things like that. Is there anything like that that you can kind of give us a tip as keeping it engaging?
Yeah. Some inside tips.
Yeah.
For the Crossfader crew. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, well, the first one is spot on. Like if you make the first 5 minutes really good and engaging, that's when people decide if they're going to last, if they're going to stick through it.
Yeah.
So if you make the first 5 minutes really good and engaging, you're much more likely to have people listening throughout. The other thing I'd say is like consistency is key.
Yeah.
So if you can commit to doing something, whether it's once a week or once a month, you know, having that consistency, having a consistent theme in your artwork, you know, having those types of consistencies really builds a strong brand and ultimately builds loyalty.
Yeah.
The people who going to be your fans. And then I think, you know, just don't expect everything to happen overnight.
Right.
If you're just starting out, you know, it may take some time. You might want to build up a little bit of a fan base before you turn on the monetization and do the subscriber thing. You know, you probably want a few hundred or if not thousand fans following you to build up that kind of awareness.
Sure. It does all fall back into that consistency thing. We talk about it a lot on different, whether we're talking about, you know, putting out video content or mixes or things like that. As long as you're doing it a certain time frame every week and keep up to it, you will see the benefits eventually.
Exactly.
So on the flip side, obviously we've talked about how just the general consumer can go to Mixcloud to listen to their favorite DJs, but as a beginner DJ coming on to Mixcloud, like what are the different plans that you have available? I know we need to talk about Mixcloud Live. That's a big new thing that you guys have launched. But Mixcloud is more than just a live platform. As we've said, you can post things on there and have people follow you. So as a beginner DJ, what would you recommend for their route joining Mixcloud? Would it be to just set up a basic plan and start uploading mixes and then upgrade as they go along?
Yeah. So as a DJ, there's just two types of accounts that you can have. The standard free one, which actually gives you access to a ton of stuff. It gives you absolutely unlimited uploads. So there's no limit on the number of things that you can upload. There's no limit on the time that you can upload. You can upload as much as you want. You can follow people. People can follow you. You can rank in the charts, all sorts of things like that. That's a sort of free account. Then the other type of account is the Pro, Mixcloud Pro, which is our pro membership for DJs. And essentially what that gives you is a few different things. Gives you access to extra stats, so you can see who is listening from where for how long. You can actually see where people drop off in a mix.
Right.
You can see down to the city level where they're listening from. You can even see if they're on iPhone or Android or if they're on your website or another website.
Yep.
So it's pretty advanced stats that you can go into there. Then we've got the ability to schedule uploads, so you can create that consistency. You can say, okay, I want this upload to go live Friday at 5 p.m. for the weekend for everybody or whatever time you want. You've got the ability to turn on that monetization program that I mentioned called Mixcloud Select, where you can choose a price, monthly price point, choose what you want to make exclusive or not. And then recently, within the last 6 months, what we've bundled in there as well is the ability to go live and stream live. All of that, I should say everything is copyright cleared, and we take care of the royalties and the licensing. And so you as a DJ, you don't have to worry about the problems that a lot of people have experienced on Facebook, where they've been muted, or on Instagram, where they've been taken down, or on Twitch, where they've been taken down. And so I think that is really the core thing right now, that a lot of people are like, I did that. Like, that just solves this problem that I've been having.
Just a quick one for those legends out there, only legends that listen to this podcast. If you are interested in leveling up your skills, learning to DJ, learning to get more gigs, wondering how CDJs work, if you're a techno DJ, hip-hop DJ, house DJ, then why not take a course with Crossfader and use the code OFFTHERECORD to get 20% off any of our DJ courses. Like I say, just for legends who listen to this podcast. So just go to wearecrossfader.co.uk, use the code OFFTHERECORD, and you'll get 20% off any of our DJ courses.
Okay, so we've got Paul here on the call. Welcome to Off The Record, the DJ podcast. Really glad to have you here, Paul. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Paul is the founder of InFlight, which is a promo service that provides promos from labels directly to DJs. And we're going to find out a lot more about what this service is and Paul's background and where this service came from. So, Paul, could you tell us a little bit about who you are, how InFlight came about, and a bit more about what InFlight as a service is for DJs and for labels?
Hi, Jamie. Thanks for having us. So InFlight was founded in 2014. We'd actually been sort of developing from about 2012. My background really, at that stage, I was a BBC radio presenter here in Belfast, doing a show to promote Irish electronic music. And at that stage, digital promo services had just, there'd been a couple that had been around for a few years. But I'd seen a lot of problems with the amount of music that I was receiving back on the radio at that stage, hundreds of promos a week. There was no real efficient way of managing them all, you know, and especially in the BBC, we were getting lots of spam coming through platforms. The technology was really dodgy. You would click on a link and sometimes it wouldn't play, and then you would be on to the next promo and you wouldn't get a chance to check out the promo because there was an issue with the technology. And also the biggest thing was that no company had developed a mobile solution for promo delivery at that stage. When back in 2012, I was doing a lot of touring internationally as well as a DJ and producer, and I was looking for a solution to be able to listen to promos while I was in the airport or on the plane, when I had that, all that time spare traveling. And there was nothing really there that ticked that box. So that's when the kind of the idea for InFlight was born, the idea being that we develop a mobile solution for the traveling touring DJ that integrated cloud storage with offline sync. The idea being that as a DJ, I could sit in the plane and listen to all my promos with the promos offline on a mobile app. When I get to my hotel and my destination before I go into the club, I can open up my laptop and sync all the promos directly to my laptop, play them in the club. And that's really where the initial idea came from. So that didn't exist back then. So that's what we started working on. We spent a few years sort of working on that and then sort of building out a platform that would be able to compete against the existing promo services that were out there. And we spent a few years doing that. Then we launched in 2014 with a number of market-leading UK PR companies. So what we do, we work with PR companies all around the world who send music out on behalf of record labels to their databases. But we also work with labels directly who send promos out to their own internal databases. And oftentimes we'll have PR companies and labels sort of sending out the same music on our service, but to different people in different territories and this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we've kind of grown from there over the last, six years to be sort of considered the market leader now, I suppose, in the space that we're in.
Nice. So when starting out, obviously, you're a totally new service. So how was it received from the labels? Did you manage to get any major labels to start with, or were you really working with smaller independent labels and had to build it up? You know, how did that work?
Small independent, but well-respected independents, you know, some of the PR companies that we had. So it's a chicken and egg thing. You know, in order to launch a service like this, you need to have quality DJs on the service who are already signed up to receive the music, but you're also going to need quality labels on there so the DJs will want to receive that music. And so we worked out how to do both. So we had a lot of highly respected labels that we knew once that had happened that the DJs would come. And it was, we spent a lot of time getting out to the market with the product. I mean, because I was talking to DJs all the time through connections on the road, touring, warming up for sort of big names. And I was also talking to a lot of the labels and the PRs through my connections with the radio. So, you know, we had a few trusted ears that helped sort of guide the initial stages of the platform so that when we did launch, we knew that there was a good product market fit. We knew that the DJs were going to be receptive to it and want to sign up. We knew the labels were going to want to deliver promos straight to DJs' mobiles. So, there was a lot of work went on behind the scenes, sort of beta testing and sort of gauging the opinions and mood of people, stakeholders at both sides of the equation, because it's all well and good having a really good sort of promo delivery service, but if the DJs don't like it, it's kind of redundant. Or you might have one where the DJs like, but the labels don't, or there's something wrong. So you have to, it's kind of a balancing act where you have to sort of satisfy both sides of the sort of deal there, you know.
For sure. Before we talk a bit more about how InFlight's developed over the last 6 years, you've mentioned a few times there that you were a DJ and a touring producer. Were you an act at the time when you were first starting InFlight? And for anyone that's listening, the DJs that are listening to this podcast, you want to maybe give yourself a little bit of a big up on...
I've been DJing since I was 15, but I spent from about 2007 until about 2013 touring internationally as an act called Psychotron. So labels that I've been signed to would have included Bedrock, RNS, Planet E, Hot Flush. Done collaborations with like Paul Wolford and Semi Mobile Disco and people like that. So we had some success for a couple of years.
Nice.
And that was kind of what I was doing sort of full time before.
Do you think those connections to some of those other artists at the time helped you launch InFlight because you had connections with producers and other artists and labels at that time because you were a working DJ or a working...
Yeah, well, it definitely helped. I mean, especially through my work with the BBC. I mean, every week I'd be interviewing international DJs. It's a network. Like, InFlight's a result of a network that has been building, a personal network that's built over like 15, 20 years or more, potentially. So, being able to draw on those connections and go to them for advice or whatever was a very important factor, because it's all well and good having an idea and you might think it's a great idea, but if nobody else does, then, need to kind of validate these things before you bring something to the market. So it did help, and having that personal network, no doubt, helped us launch the product when it came to 2014.
Did you have any experience from the technical side? Obviously, it's a very tech-forward... taking the promo delivery service and building it into an application. It was, one of the first big ones that came about, and it's one that I've used since it had launched. So I'm quite familiar with it, but did you have any tech background, or is there another part of the team that really took on that lead?
Yeah, well, all our tech is developed in-house, and my co-founder is a very good friend of mine. I've been friends for over 20 years. We kind of developed it. He's big into his music. I've always been big into technology and user experience and things like that. So it's a simple case of taking sort of my experience of using websites, using applications, mobile apps, combining them with, his methodology for building something. He's the technical side of it, whereas I prefer to be sort of the user experience, user facing side of things. We're a good team. He's big into his music as well, so it's a lot of the ideas that were developed or develops kind of hand in hand. I'd go to him with something and he'd tell me yes or no whether he thinks it could have worked or what the technical kind of implications for something like that would be. But it's an ever-evolving platform, which is the thing that I think has given us the bit of an edge over a lot of the other platforms in the space. Is that, we're fairly good at rolling out new features and new updates, and we try not to sit still for too long, because technology is always changing. You know, the things that go into making a promo service work are things that most people will never see, you know, ensuring that links always work, the fastest delivery speeds, whether you're in South America or in London. You know, the security aspect of things that go on behind the scenes, ensuring that your music's getting into the right hands and that it's a usable system that people enjoy using. There's a, you know, it's the simplicity is a very difficult thing to develop.
Yeah.
So it takes time. And, you know, there's, you know, when it comes to the sort of 7 years or 6 or 7 years that we've been building this, a lot of that time has been spent refining little things that will be invisible to most people, but to the things that make people come back and use our product more and engage with the music that they're being sent to on a more regular basis. Because the less time people spend on our site clicking things and working to download music, the more music they get to listen to, the more our labels get value, they get better value for what they invest in in-flight. And yeah, so it's an ever-evolving kind of thing that there's a lot of work goes on behind the scenes.
Nice. It's interesting you say that it's an ever-evolving thing, and there's obviously a lot of little things that go on behind the scene. Now, have there been any technological advancements in the last 6 years that have provided opportunities or even hurdles, things that have changed in the last 6 years that have allowed in-flight to move further or even be held back? Is there anything you can think of?
A couple of things that came along. I mean, you know, when we integrated sort of cloud storage, you know, we were the first platform to do that, by integrating Dropbox when we launched in 2014, that would allow DJs to sync promos from directly from InFlight to their integrated Dropbox account. But then there are loads of things. We're always looking at ways to integrate new solutions that add value to our customers. So, you know, the other one would be with Google Maps integration. So our clients can see a Google Maps representation of their database. So they can see where the DJs are. They can click on pins and see who's in each different area. We've got Twitter integration, so that labels and in-flight can directly engage and create dialogue with people in their database on their Twitter feed for thanking them for leaving promo or feedback, that kind of thing. We also added Alexa, Amazon Alexa voice activated integration a few years back as well. So, you know, and then things that we look, there's a lot of things that come up that could be useful, but it's always a case of weighing up, you know, what DJs would like, what the labels would like, and that kind of thing. You know, even talking about the likes of, you know, GDPR when all that came along a few years ago and everybody was losing their minds thinking Y2K. We started out, I mean, one of the problems that we tried to fix was the problem of promo spam and people just getting unsolicited promo emails, which is a big issue and a pain in the backside for people whose inboxes are already swamped as it is. So InFlight has always been an opt-in platform where DJs need to get permission to receive music. So that meant when that GDPR thing came around, that you know, we didn't have to do a thing because we were already compliant in all aspects of that. And now it's a thing. I mean, a few years back, people were like, "Oh, why do I have to opt in? That's all. People won't want to do this." But now it's kind of become law that you have to. So thankfully, it was a decision that we made early on that saved us a ton of work later down the line. You know,
from personal experience, I can back that up and say that being a member of InFlight and having promos delivered to me as a DJ in that way, I would, you know, a few years ago when I was working full time as a DJ, I'd be looking in my inbox and it was only really the InFlight ones that I would open and follow through because it was like a trusted source, whereas I get loads of other emails and because they were coming from different places and they weren't collated in any way, it was just a random email with a link, they kind of got lost in my emails and I always just waited for the next InFlight update and just went through to the dashboard and looked through promos that way. And it just shows by opting in and by confirming that, you know, I'm a DJ and I want to receive these promos from these labels, it puts a bit more weight and value on it as well, especially for the labels.
It was something that I was doing sort of even before InFlight came along. You know, the way I had my inbox set up was that the trusted sources were the first ones that I would go to check the promos from, you know, the PR companies and like the labels that always sending me good quality content. And by the time you'd gone through all that stuff, everything else was sitting in your inbox. You know, you didn't have time to give it a look in. So, you know, that's why the likes of gatekeepers and PR companies and opt-ins are crucially important for getting your music out to the right people, you know, because if you've created that engagement with somebody by asking their permission first to send your music and you've told them these are the artists I represent. This is kind of music you can expect from us. You've already developed a bit of a relationship there, so that when we do send out your promo delivery, that they're warmed up to it and they'll know, well, I've given permission for that. I'm going to check it out, you know.
Nice. So before we move on and talk about the big integration that a lot of our listeners will be aware of with Rekordbox, I just want to ask, do you have any advice for DJs on how to get added to labels' promo lists that are offered through InFlight or just in general? Because we have a lot of DJs that listen to the podcast and watch our YouTube that are sort of up-and-coming DJs. They're just getting their foot out the door now and working in the industry, and they won't be signed up to many mailing lists. And it's one of the big sort of hurdles that a lot of DJs face is getting on these mailing lists. So do you have any advice for those DJs?
I think the biggest advice is, you know, there's been a real sort of issue with a kind of sense of entitlement that's developed over the last few years, I think, when it's come to promos, where certain DJs expect to be added to lists, and when they're not, they get kind of annoyed that nobody's responded to them. And then a label will look and see, well, they've got 20 followers on Twitter and, you know, 30 on Instagram. The whole idea of sending out a promo is to promote you, to promote a label's record. So if you're contacting labels and you've got a very low profile on social networks, you're going to struggle for a label to pay attention and to take you seriously, you know. So you need to be doing something, and whether that's having a radio show where you're publicizing your track listing every week, whether you're doing shows or live streams, that kind of thing. But it's you know, it's like anything else. If you're looking for record companies to send you music for free, you need to be polite, be nice, be courteous, show a bit of respect, explain who you are and why you will support their music. It's up to labels largely whether they will want to send you music or not. But every label differs. You know, some labels are happy to accept anybody onto their lists, where others are more selective. I mean, we see a lot of our labels won't have any more than 100 or 150 DJs on their list because they want to keep a small quality selection of key supporters who they trust to put that music out there all the time. But it's one of those things. It's, how do I get promos if I don't have the profile? Well, if you don't have the profile, you know, you shouldn't really be getting promos, because how are you going to promote them? How are you going to add value to that label's kind of release? You know, if you have no means of actually publicizing that, playing it, or letting people outside of your bedroom hear it, you know, and that's the whole idea.
I mean, that backs up what we say here at Crossfaded to all of the DJs that follow us. We say, you know, put as much content out as possible, build your profile, build your socials up. And I think more than anything now, with the lockdowns that have come in place and live streaming becoming such a big platform for DJs, there's a huge opportunity here for DJs to really show what they're about and build a loyal following and audience. If they can't work in clubs at the moment, you can still build that following. And you know, if you go to a label and say, look, I've got 1,000 people listening regularly to my live show once a week, then that gives you a lot of support to get onto labels mailing lists, I would have thought anyway. Yeah.
Keep in touch with labels. I mean, if they don't necessarily respond to you at first, and you've been playing their stuff on the live stream that you bought on Beatport or whatever, send them a track listing and show them, look, I've been playing this on my live stream. We had, you know, a couple of thousand listeners or whatever. You know, don't give up at the first hurdle, but also expect not to get on every mailing list that you ask for, because some of them are really super tight. They don't add anybody, and then, you know, others have different kind of strategies. But yeah, it's overall developing relationships. Again, it's that thing when I spoke about, you know, developing a sort of personal network. It's something that takes years, and it takes years of being consistent and keeping in touch with labels, showing how you are supporting or intend to support the music is probably the best way to do it, as opposed to just spamming people with the same kind of copy and paste email. You know, be personable, and show the label that you are somebody who will respect their music and look after it, and, you know, sure, do all the things with it.
That's fantastic advice for everyone listening. So let's move on. Where did the Rekordbox integration come from? Now, obviously, Rekordbox is one of the leading DJ softwares out there, and I know a lot of people use their software. It's definitely popular within our audiences. So where did that integration come from, and why do you see it as being such an important integration for DJs and for labels?
Well, for us, it's all about the simplicity. Again, it's taking away some of the friction involved in promo. I mean, when we developed InFlight, we had cloud storage integration with Dropbox. Everything syncs to Dropbox. It's great. You can then sync your Dropbox folder to Rekordbox, but we wanted to take it another step further for DJs that don't maybe use Dropbox, but use Rekordbox. And that's what this integration has allowed us to do. So it's allowed us to basically sync, DJs can sync any promos from their in-flight dashboards directly to Rekordbox. And the great thing about this is that, yes, it takes away a step where they don't have to download and they don't have to add folders and move everything into Rekordbox. But more importantly, it copies it. It takes part of the promo process, which is when you leave a feedback on a release on InFlight and you say, yeah, I really love this, I'm going to play it out at the weekend, and you give that track a favorite and you pick your favorite track on it and you rate it, that metadata copies now into Rekordbox. So instead of you downloading an EP, but God, I forget which track I liked on that EP, yeah, most or album, and it's got its way in InFlight, all that information now copies into Rekordbox. So it's another way of streamlining the workflow for DJs when it comes to building playlists for their sets, that ensures all the files are in the one place. They can download WAV/AIF or MP3, and it's in the pretty much the number one solution for DJs playing on Pioneer hardware in the clubs. So for us, it was a no-brainer. It came around through Pioneer contacting us a few years ago at ADE. We met, sat down, and realized that we both had the same kind of vision for developing sort of tools that created these efficiencies and workflow for DJs. And the ideas that were flowing at the initial meetings, led us to believe that this was going to be something that was going to add value for Rekordbox DJs and in-flight DJs. And we knew that about 75-80% of in-flight users use Rekordbox, so we knew it was going to be really well received, which it has been, thankfully, since we launched in April.
Yeah, for sure. It was one of the features on that Rekordbox release that all of us in the studio here at Crossfader were all pumped about. We're like, we didn't see that coming, and that makes so much sense. Yeah. And we were all really excited about it. It's a really nice addition to the software. Like you say, it just simplifies the whole process. I don't have to go into email and then go through the email to a dashboard, and I can integrate it much easier than downloading and importing. And
that's it. It's always like, you've DJs who work on a studio laptop, they'll do some promos on their laptop, they'll do some promos on their studio desktop, maybe another device. Now with the Rekordbox, if you've left feedback on InFlight, it'll be in your Rekordbox, doesn't matter what device you're on, So it got that kind of sync across different devices, which is very important. Because I remember years ago, it used to be a nightmare downloading things and then going, well, I don't know where is it on my laptop and my desktop, whatever. But tying up all that kind of sync kind of stuff is very important.
Sounds good.
Cool. So do you want to start at the beginning? Why did you start 1001 Tracklist? How long has it been going? What was the problem you were trying to solve, etc.?
Yeah, so I will give you my story and also the company story kind of together. So I discovered 1001 Tracklist back in 2014, I think. It was during the Ultra live stream, and I was just my roommate at the time pointed out the site to me and showed me that there's this site where you can kind of follow along as the sets are being played and someone is IDing all the tracks. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really cool for music discovery. Yeah. And also, instead of just going to YouTube or SoundCloud, you can go to this one platform that has all of the different sets available aggregated in one place. And so I used 1001 Tracklist then for the next couple of years, just kind of as like a casual listener trying to figure out what some of the tracks were. And then I finished up grad school in 2014. And then I was working at an IT consulting firm in the US. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty bored at my day job. They brought me on a little bit slowly, and I was just like looking for something else to do. And initially I filled in a notebook, like filled with shit ideas. And I decided I needed to not come up with my own idea, but maybe like latch on to someone else's idea.
Yeah.
And I reached out to a couple of companies, one of which was 1001 Tracklist. And I just sent an email to info@1001tracklist.com. And I basically said, like, I have a background in marketing. I work in IT. I've used your site for years, and I'd like to help you. And lo and behold, that kind of worked.
That's cool.
Yeah, the owner of the site is this German software developer named Jan, the founder of the site. And he, at the time, was running everything single-handedly. And so I jumped on a call with him and then built a relationship with him over email and Skype. And I basically just kind of, upon seeing that it was just him and he was overwhelmed with, you know, the business plus the tech side of it,
yeah,
just really wanted to see if I could work my way in and kind of take on some of the responsibilities.
Yeah.
And so it was me and Jacob, who's the person who originally showed me the site. We had just moved in together in DC, and together we kind of tag teamed the business side of it. And one thing led to another. And about a year after first contacting Jan, he decided that he wanted us to take over the business responsibilities pretty much entirely.
Cool.
And so from there, it was a lot of guessing and figuring things out along the way and just kind of seeing what we can do to grow the platform. To go back to one of your questions about like how the site came to exist.
Yep.
So Jan is a database expert, as you might be able to tell.
Yep.
He was working, developing like point of sale systems, like the payment systems at like grocery stores. And in 1999, he went to Ibiza for the first time and discovered dance music and
changed him.
Yeah. And, he, you know, would look for track lists on the internet at the time, but there wasn't really a good place for it. A lot of them were being posted in kind of like Reddit, like forums.
Yeah.
And so someone would post, you know, whatever tracks they knew. And then there was no way to actually like update the track list. And so he figured, oh, I can do this.
Yeah.
And he didn't realize it was going to be such a complex undertaking.
Yeah.
But he, you know, just started building it. And here we are today. That was in 2011 that he launched the initial version of it. And he knew that he wanted it to be like a user-generated content platform. And so in order to generate a little bit of buzz and you know, have like users on the platform, he actually created a bunch of fake usernames that were all him.
Oh, right.
Just to make it seem like there's a lot of people involved in doing it. And then eventually he opened it up to real other people.
That's dope. So let's fast forward to today. Sort of talk us through, you know, kind of how it works and the basis of 1001 track lists, how you go about finding them, you know, who uploads them, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, you know, it would be really nice if we could use, for example, like audio fingerprinting, but it's not so reliable in electronic music.
Sure.
Because, you know, there's so many unreleased tracks that are being played or edits and mashups of multiple tracks.
Right.
So the best system is if you have the user base for it is having, you know, a devoted user base of people around the world that can
manually,
you know, whether it's, you know, just finding the track list in the description of a SoundCloud upload.
Yeah.
Or in many cases, it's someone Shazamming the tracks and trying to figure them out.
Right.
Then the beauty of the site is that one person can add the track list. And then from there, it's editable. So if someone else knows one or more of the tracks, they can kind of help fill it in. Or if a track gets released 3 months after the set, someone can go in and edit it after the fact.
That's cool. So do you have like a full team? Also, any user can add a track list to the site or...
It's a carefully managed credentialing system.
Right, okay.
So if it's a brand new user that wants to start adding track lists, their ability to do that is going to be pretty limited. Mm-hmm. Like they might be able to add track lists, but not edit track lists. And I have a relationship, you know, in some form or another with most of the core user base.
Yep.
And so I know who I can trust and who then can have the ability to, let's say, edit track lists of a particular genre or maybe all genres. And from there, it's, you know, once people gain familiarity with the site and I can trust them, then we kind of increase their ability to interact with the site.
That's pretty cool. So what I love about the site is, you know, obviously you can find DJ sets from any famous DJ set around the world, but it's really cool, isn't it, for discovering new music as well? Because, you know, if you go and listen to an hour song playlist or something, you might not listen to the whole thing, but you can scroll down and kind of see what your favorite DJ's playing and kind of get a feel for it. And the good thing about the site is you've got access to kind of direct Spotify links and SoundCloud links, things like that, haven't you?
Yep. Yeah, we've got it all aggregated and, you know, we add as many links as we can through a combination of automated and manual processes and kind of leveraging the user community. a lot of the artists themselves also kind of take ownership of their profile on the site.
Oh, that's cool.
And understand that it's a really good place for exposure. Mm-hmm. If you've got all your track data in there, if you've got a radio show and you're uploading your own track list and kind of making sure it looks right and gets uploaded as soon as the show airs. And so over the years, that's one area that we've really seen the platform grow, is just the amount of engagement at the artist and industry level.
Yeah, like you say, great exposure, great promo for their new tracks, upcoming tracks, things like that. How you do a lot of exclusive mixes and interviews and things like that with artists. How does that come about? Do you approach them? Do they approach you? Collaborative?
It's a combination.
Yep.
It's funny. That was actually one of the first things that Jacob and I started doing when we got actively involved, was artist interviews. And we would seek them out. You know, we would, you know, try to have content for the site. And we thought it was pretty cool that we can go and get, like, you know, free tickets to a concert and get to go backstage and meet an artist and do an interview. And then it got really overwhelming because we were doing way too many. We were doing them all audio and then transcribing them. And that's like a ton of work compared to just an email interview. Now it's kind of a combination of the exclusive mix series that is like really carefully curated.
Sure.
Where we're looking for the biggest artists we can find, or people that are really kind of trending in that regard. But then we've got our Spotlight mix series, we've got an Apple Music mix series, and we do interviews as well with lots of big name artists and up and coming artists as well.
That's cool. So what is kind of the next step? What is happening this year for 1001 Tracklist? Is it just continue to grow and give fresh content and things like that? Is there anything new happening?
Yeah, so really soon, within the next couple of weeks, we're launching a new feature, which is going to be advanced search filters. So for example, you'll be able to search for progressive house track lists from 2019.
Oh, nice.
Or even like summer of 2019, maybe like only live sets. You'll be able to kind of filter down to a very specific subset to be able to, you know, really like find something specific that you're looking for. So that's going to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. We have some plans for... We've done in last year, we did kind of a design update, and it was maybe more of a stepping stone on the way to a bigger design update. And so that's planned for us to dive into soon. I'm not sure when that will be ready, and I'm not going to commit to it time, but it's coming up for us to at least be doing the work to implement the designs that we have. And the designs that we have are pretty cool. Very much modernizes everything that's there. It's not such an easy site to present in a sleek way, given all of the functionality on the site.
Data and all of that, sure.
But if you look at the old versions of the site from maybe 6 or 7 years ago, you'll see that where we are today is a totally different place from then. And I think that within the next couple of years, we should continue to be taking steps in the right direction with that.
No, that's amazing. Yeah, like I said, the main thing with like our students, and we upload, you know, mixes every week, and it is that thing of, you know, what track is this, you know, what ID, you know, 1 minute in, and that's, you know, that is kind of the pain point and the problem that you guys are trying to solve pretty much every day. And it's amazing that you've got this big user base, haven't you, that can request. You've got a Discord that people can request track lists for and things like that, haven't you? So
yeah, we've got a really active core user base of essentially just fans that, you know, really care about contributing to the platform, being part of the user community, and making the site as comprehensive and accurate as possible. And then, like I mentioned before, there's so many artists themselves that are contributing.
Sure.
And that's something that just continues to grow by the day. People that are reaching out, asking to get credentials to upload track lists. One thing to note about the artists is that in order to have track lists on the site, you need to have 3 tracks on the site and support by at least 3 artists, or 1 track with support from at least 10 different artists.
So that now like we're creating that kind of credibility, right?
Yeah, we're creating kind of like a baseline threshold of relevancy so that I, as a bedroom DJ, can't just start spamming the site with track lists.
Sure, yeah, just give that extra bit of credibility. That's amazing, man. Like I say, that's great. Like I say, the people are kind of followers and our students are always on the hunt for new music and track lists, and this is just kind of a one-stop shop for that, isn't it? So it's great, man. Yeah, thank you so much for talking to me today, and yeah, we'll continue to be using this because it's a godsend for me, especially over the last kind of 12 months. So yeah, thank you for speaking to us today, Evan, and I'll let you get off. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Yep. Thanks, Lawrence.
No problem, dude. Thank you, man. Bye.